Imperfect leaders. Are you facing challenges filling open speech language pathologist positions within your district? It's kind of a silly question because I know you are. MPAT Speech understands the critical need for qualified professionals in your schools. They recognize that communication lies at the heart of academic success, and that's why they're dedicated to helping you bridge the gap by offering expert therapists and innovative telehealth solutions. Don't let open positions hinder your students' success. Partner with MPAT Speech today and ensure every child in your district has access to the speech therapy they deserve. MPAT Speech, empatspeech.com. Empowering students, empowering schools.
When my guest today revealed herself as an infiltrator, I couldn't contain myself. So funny, it's so true. Imperfect leaders, we have been infiltrated by the first teacher to join the podcast. And she's perfect. I refer to her as the bridge between classroom teachers and district leaders. She pulls back the curtain on how teachers think about leadership in district-wide decisions. And you know what? It's not magic, as we will quickly learn. In the second part, my guest, well, she talks about pushing her own agenda on students and how, well, she may have been focusing on her needs over the needs of others. Once again, there's a lot of what she says is so true on how leaders lead their districts. So yes, we have been infiltrated. This episode is full of TLC, as only my guest Danielle Neufer can deliver it. And I love it. It's a great episode. I'm Peter Stiepelman, and this is an Imperfect Leader. Today on an Imperfect Leader, Danielle Neufer is my guest, and Danielle is a former public school teacher turned coach, and she is the author of The Path of the Mindful Teacher, How to Choose Calm Over Chaos and Serenity Over Stress, One Step at a Time. She has spent the last 20 plus years navigating the ebbs and flows of school systems while helping clients prioritize their own well-being so that they can be the very best inside and outside their classroom and school. Danielle, welcome to An Imperfect Leader.
Hi, so great to be here. Thank you.
I'm so happy to meet you. Well, you know, this podcast is almost exclusively, it's been exclusively really reserved for district leaders and education adjacent leaders. And I think it's important to live something that I say whenever I describe the hierarchy of a school system. And that's that there are leaders at every level. And it's from our teachers that we can truly transform our schools. And so I wonder if you would you tell us a little bit about mindful awareness, the secret to stepping up and creating change as a leader? And if I remember correctly, I think there are three simple steps that you really prescribe.
Sure. So again, thank you for letting me kind of infiltrate your podcast.
That's right.
I'll say it that way.
I love it.
Yeah, I like it. Thanks for letting me be here. This is how I see myself, as kind of like that bridge between teachers and school leaders. And I think that's a perfect welcome. So thank you for letting me be here. In my work with teachers, I have done a lot of work with helping them learn how to respond to situations rather than react. And I've done a lot of that work with teachers in their classrooms. And I thought it would be really great to try to just bring this kind of system to school leaders so that they can maybe try it out. And I think so often teachers want to do things like this, but when we have school leaders model, even if it's not specifically like you guys need to do these techniques, when we see our school leaders living this sort of well-being and living this mindful awareness and really just starting to bring this into the way that they lead our schools, amazing things can happen, and teachers really start to feel that freedom to explore these things on their own. So I'm just going to give you three ways to create change as a leader in regard to mindfulness. And it's TLC, because we love acronyms with education. So T stands for tracing your tendencies. L stands for leaning into your scripts and learning about your scripts. And C is create opportunities for calm. So what I would like to invite any school leader who's listening to this is to what I call first, trace your tendencies. So when you are going through the school system, walking around, going from classroom to classroom or entering the hallway, and you feel something that really irritates you, Just make note of it. What's irritating you? What's kind of, what's bringing some joy? What's causing you to have some emotional reaction? And I just want you to get curious about that. You don't have to do anything about it, but I want you to just get curious about when those things happen. So maybe trace these tendencies for a day or for a couple of days. When do you feel, you know, some sort of emotion happening within your body? And just write it down. So that's the T, is just trace your tendencies. And then L is learn about your scripts. And what scripts are those automatic responses or reactions we have to things. So when are we acting on autopilot? And I want you to just be a little curious. Can I see this situation differently? Can I see this student's behavior differently? Can I see this teacher's interactions with me differently? Can I see this parent's incessant phone calls differently? You know, can I bring a little curiosity? And I like to call it flipping the script. So is there a bigger thing that's going on that we just aren't seeing? And normally there is, and we might not even know what it is, and it doesn't even matter if we figure it out. It's just allowing for the possibility that we don't have to be reactive and that there's more to it. And then the final is
before you get to the final, hold on, before you get to the final, because I had some thoughts about your first two so far. And the second one, I feel even more compelled to say something, which is that often when I am coaching a principal or a superintendent, and you mentioned that incessant email or phone call, and that certainly had me now tracing my tendencies going, like, how am I feeling? Why do I feel that way? Why do I want to get into the corner right now in a sort of a fetal position? Mm-hmm. But one of the things I would say is I would always encourage people to sort of pan for gold. And I would ask them to kind of just, I know you're hearing all these things, and sometimes it's insulting because you're hearing, you know, this is unacceptable, or this is how I think that you clearly haven't thought through this entire issue, and all these things that may or may not be true, but also just look for the sort of those golden nuggets, those big pieces that actually might actually be able to tell you how that family is feeling in that moment. They might be scared. Their child's been suspended 3 or 4 times and they don't have the answers either. So they're scared, they're worried, they're frightened, they're anxious. And that may be the piece of where you can find some common ground of, and I'm also like, don't have all the answers, but we could probably find them together. Right. And so being able to sort of do that work together, leaning in and flipping that script and really kind of thinking about where is that individual or that community member who comes to the podium month after month at a board meeting to tell you that, you know, that I had one that told me that she would divorce me if she were married to me and that I was a chicken, and then she put on a chicken head. So, you know, they're sometimes really ridiculous ones, but in that moment, what was she really feeling? I mean, how she acted is different than how she was feeling, which is scared for her child, anxious for her child's future. So anyhow, those two are super. I can't wait to hear the third.
Yeah, no, those are great examples. And then the third is C, which is create opportunities for calm. And I think you made this abundantly clear. These things are going to happen. So even the best of us, who, like, I know my emotional reaction, my triggers, my scripts, I want to flip them. It's still going to come back. Like, these things are going to continue to perpetually happen. Like, and it's never going to not happen. So we have to create opportunities for calm. So what can we do in that moment? Like you had said, pan for gold, do something that's going to find, you know, a little bit of positivity within what they said. Create opportunities for calm in regard to how can you schedule some moments in your day to just shut your door. I was getting interviewed for a podcast, and one of the leaders said that he would go out on the athletic director would take him out on the little golf cart so he could like go around outside and like get some space when he was having a stressful time. So they had like this secret, you know, whatever hand gesture, like, come on, let's just like get out of here so I can have some moments of space. So, you know, whatever you need to do to create some opportunities for calm in the moment and within your day is going to be imperative, because these things, no matter how much you know yourself, they will still test you. Like it just is an ever evolving thing.
In my book, An Imperfect Leader, and in
the leadership model that I use to advise others, there is this dimension. And actually, you just spoke to it a moment ago because, you know, tracing your tendencies, making a note, sort of like that muscle memory. Mm-hmm. Well, this dimension is called nested patterns. And it's the muscle memory of an organization's work. And inside that dimension, there's a term, shared leadership. And shared leadership is such an important component because it really gets to Peter Senge's work of what do we want to create together and how do we want to be together? And when district or school leaders establish the values for their school and they do it without including teachers and staff, for instance, it usually results in maybe the most charitable way of describing it would be passive engagement. And when I read in your book, it totally aligns, I think, with the second noble truth of teaching. Much of our stress comes from not knowing how to manage the external factors, often beyond our control, and that absolutely impact our classrooms. And so I'm curious what you think about that, that this notion that if teachers had a greater role in shared leadership, that that might actually positively impact morale and the stress that teachers face truly on a daily basis.
Yeah, I couldn't have said that better. And I feel like that right there is one of the key pieces. It's that perceived involvement. Like teachers don't need to be involved with every little detail, but they need to know that there is a rhythm and a routine and a way for them to get their voices heard that is absolutely in place and that they will be considered and fully considered. So I think a seat at the table is a really important thing. Really getting feedback and knowing that there's a process for this. There's a process for getting your needs met or getting your voice heard. It can look very different depending on the school and depending on the leader, but that process needs to be really over-communicated to teachers. Like sometimes, you know, I'll talk to school leaders and they'll say, well, there is a process. They, you know, they can do this and they can, and then I'll talk to teachers and they're like, there's no process, you know, because sometimes they're in this high stress, like they haven't heard it. And I'm like, so I'm like trying to play.
You really are the bridge.
Yeah. Because I come in not knowing, like I'm a very new fly on the wall. So I'm learning from the teachers and I'm learning from the school leaders. And oftentimes it's just they're talking past one another and need more reminders, subtle reminders, really blatant reminders of how they can get their needs met. And sometimes they also need to be reminded of the things that have happened, right? Like there are things that school leaders are doing that the teachers in their overstress, burnout, you know, that sort of that when they're living in that space, they sometimes forget and don't see all the things that are being done. So it goes both ways.
That's interesting. You know, I was talking with a superintendent, I've mentioned her before in previous podcast episodes, Avis Williams, who's the superintendent in New Orleans. And she said to me that sometimes people talk about wanting transparency. And what she has learned is that what people really want is clarity. And you just said it, I think, in a different way, which is not everybody needs to know every decision that's being made and how they got to that decision, but rather they want real clarity on the big pieces and understanding why they're making certain decisions together. It just really, that really resonated for me because it's true that you'll meet a leader who'll say, well, I there's a process. It's in an email. You know, I'm sure they got it. And I'm going, that's great. How many emails do you get a day? How many do you think teachers get a day? And do you think this is really what they were looking for when you said, well, we're going to be working on X, Y, or Z? So that's really interesting to me. Thanks. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'd like to ask you a question that I ask of every guest who comes on the podcast. How does the term an imperfect leader resonate with you?
I think in years past, I would have said that that's like an oxymoron, right? Like when I first learned about leadership, you know, way back when, I would have said, no, leaders aren't like they don't like that's not what leadership is. It's knowing your stuff. It's doing your stuff. It's you're the best. You have, you know, succeeded and done that. But I feel like this new generation of leadership needs this imperfect leadership model because leaders need permission, just like everybody else, to say, you know what, I messed that up. Like, you know, like that was not what I wanted to do. It wasn't my intention. And I think that we need to allow leaders to have spaces where they can work through those things. And so I think that that is what the new, I think that's what the new vision of leadership needs to be, that we can all be imperfect. We all are imperfect. And then let's try to do better when we know better.
And we'll be right back. Hey, district leaders, I know you already know this. In schools worldwide, cell phones are posing real challenges on student engagement and mental well-being, and I want you to meet Yonder, a proud sponsor of An Imperfect Leader. And let me share this story from a visit I made to some schools in Silicon Valley. I asked some kids what they liked about Yonder, and after some funny looks, they shared that actually, with Yonder, teachers don't have to battle with them over phones anymore. In fact, one kid said to me he didn't have to worry anymore about his parents texting him in class, and the kid next to him like sort of shoved him and was, "Texting? My mom used to FaceTime me in class." I want to introduce you to a support system that increases teaching and learning. I want you to discover why a million students choose Yonder daily. Minimize distractions. Maximize learning potential. To learn more, go to overyonder.com. Y-O-N-D-R. We're back for segment two of An Imperfect Leader called Imperfect Leadership in After Action. And my guest is Danielle Newferin. She is an educator, a coach, and the author of The Path of the Mindful Teacher, How to Choose Calm Over Chaos and Serenity Over Stress, One Step at a Time. And in this segment, we ask our guests to deconstruct a decision that they've had to make, that they made, and then we discuss it. So Danielle, what happened?
So I wanted to give an example of me being a new teacher and then still an experienced teacher, pushing my agenda on my students. And I remember, I can't even tell you that this happened. I mean, this happened all the time, especially during crunch time at the end of a unit or the end of a marking period, how I would just teach to the bell. And I was just pushing my agenda and never really considering what my students needed. And as I grew in my teaching practice, I realized I needed to look at who was actually in front of me and what they needed. And what I learned is that once I actually pulled back, I could get further with them later on if I just paused and met them where they needed me to meet them at.
So let's unpack that a little bit, because I think that's a really juicy topic, as my mentor Linda Henke would say, because when you think about new leaders, superintendents, principals, often they enter these jobs with this sense of urgency. And one of the things that we talk about when it comes to systems thinking is to really resist the urge to make an impulsive decision, right? To do things quickly. And I think you're speaking to that a bit. I also think that you're speaking to almost having blinders on where you want to go and maybe not sort of looking around to see if everybody else is with you. And that's a real learning, I think, for leaders as well. Mm-hmm. So as you think about this experience of rather looking at your students and what they needed and really focusing on what you felt like you needed to accomplish, what do you see as getting overlooked in that situation?
I think that human connection, right? Like it's that human connection. It's I wasn't seeing them as them. Like I was seeing them as a group to be moved forward into my agenda and what I needed. And, you know, if you go back to the TLC acronym, like tracing my tendencies, I was anxious. And my script was that they needed to get this information. And the more and more I was a teacher, I realized they don't even a lot of times remember a lot of what I'm teaching them, but I bet they will remember me pausing and looking at them in the face and saying, like, what do you actually need right now? Can you write it down? Can we like go deeper into this? And again, doesn't need to happen all the time, but once in a while it did need to happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're really speaking to creating that calm for yourself, you're giving yourself permission to pause for a moment on what are, whether it's your state standards or assessments that are coming up or all those types of pieces that really do serve as incredible stressors for educators. And instead also recognizing I have got to balance the fact that I need to know the people who are here in this classroom with me. Mm-hmm. And that will then perhaps lead to them feeling a sense of calm that they can reduce that affective filter, right? You can't learn if you're so stressed, but you can learn if you feel like the person who's teaching you is there for you and is creating this space where you feel honored and valued, that sort of a cultural field that exists. Mm-hmm. So then I guess, as you think about this, what did you learn about relationships? Or as a result of pausing, taking that step back, flipping the switch to recognize what your kids needed as opposed to what you needed, what new relationships were formed?
So I think that that is what was formed, was that new relationship. That is, you know, in all of my schooling and all of my education, I always thought those, you know, those getting to know you units and those little things were like really cutesy. Like, I was a high school English teacher. I'm outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I thought it was like cutesy and like fine and fun and like, but then when I realized, no,
you
like
get one icebreaker. One ice.
Yeah, right.
That's it.
We're moving on.
We've broken the ice. Now let's go.
I have Shakespeare to read. Come on. Let's go, right, people.
Right, exactly. We'll do the Book of Will, maybe. That's fun. We'll do it for Christmas. But otherwise.
That is what I felt like. And I'll tell you that over the years, it was the relationships that sealed the deal. Like, that was what I needed to build. That is what I relied upon. That is what I needed to cultivate in order for real learning to happen, for them to feel safe in my classroom. And it sounds trite and I'm sure it's overused, but that was the game for me.
It's interesting when you think about teaching literature and the arc of a story and you know, so often it's the relationships that characters forged with each other or with themselves as they sort of overcame whatever the issue was in that story. And so how true that should also like transpire within our own classrooms, mm-hmm. right? That mm-hmm. that we have this arc of the year and mm-hmm. there are ebbs and flows within that year. And the only way we get through all of that together, content and character, is through understanding and relating to each other. So mm-hmm. That's really wonderful. What does that look like when you're coaching people now? How do you help them see the importance of relationship building within the classroom?
So when I coach people now, I think it has been more, because I was a high school English teacher for over 20 years. So I think it's more embedded in what teachers are seeing now. Like, they get I work with a lot of teachers in Harrisburg in the city. They are well aware that relationship building is the key to getting real learning to happen. So I do think that there has been a shift where people are realizing it's not just a nice thing to do, but really it's the key to it's a key to classroom management in many, many ways, is building relationships.
Do you see a generational change from the generation for us as teachers and knowing that relationships were important? We may not have seen them as essential when we first started and then actually came around to understanding that better. And the same thing for leaders. They should really get to know the people that they're leading, because you're asking them to do things and to have legitimacy with the people that they're leading. And you can't do that unless there's a relationship. But my original question here was just about sort of generational. There seems to be a real interest in building good relationships with kids. And sometimes our coaching has to be about where the line is, you know, in terms of where you are in terms of building that relationship, and that you're still the adult and the teacher, mm-hmm. not their friend.
Definitely. And I was actually going to add that what I fear and what I see sometimes is a pendulum swing to the other side, where we're just building relationships, content is out the window, we're not doing the things that we were put in a school to do. And again, like you had said about, you know, the line of you know, still being the leader and the adult in the classroom. You know, I think that, again, I think that is more the art of teaching now so than when I was, you know, it was more the art of content and how to bring this to a classroom. I think that's still it, but I think it's also, we need to meet our kids' social emotional needs while also teaching them. Like, they need to have the content. Like, that is part of our job. So there is a delicate balance, and what I don't want to see is the pendulum swinging so far to the relationship building where we forget what we were hired to do.
I wonder also, looking back at the series of questions I typically ask, and, you know, what happened and what got overlooked and what'd you learn about relationships? And sometimes I ask, what could you have done differently? And sometimes it's different from what got overlooked, because sometimes what got overlooked speaks to something in the system that didn't support you or the leader. And then, the what could you have done differently is really singularly focused on you. And I wonder, in your scenario of focusing on your content and potentially overlooking what was right in front of you, is there something else that you would think of when you think of that question of what could you have done differently?
I think that why I wrote the book, The Path of the Mindful Teacher, was really about my journey to starting to actually really understand who I was and who I was as an educator. So I think that what I could have done differently is I was very perfectionistic. Like, I was very into, like, you know, when I went for my job interview, it was more like perfectionism is both my strength and my weakness, right? Like, that was like the go-to. So I think that what could I do differently was that I could have tried to let go of that a little earlier in my career, because once I did, there was a lot more waiting for me to do in my classroom and to show up as and to experience in my classroom.
Yeah, to be your authentic self and to recognize you are imperfect. And sometimes through our mistakes or our experiences is really where our greatest learning happens. And I'm curious, in the end, you have sort of, I imagine, this sort of evolution or this transformation over the period of your career that you have now taken into this coaching work that you do in the book that you wrote. But what was something that was good that came out of this experience?
Well, I think just really showing up as fully myself with my students. And I think that is a gift that leaders can give their teachers. And that's a gift that teachers can give their students, that I could make those mistakes, reframe, come back, say, let's try that a different way. My perfectionist self, you know, when I started teaching, couldn't really do that. I didn't want to address any of it. It was, you know, continue, move ahead. Let's just go through this. Let's forget that yesterday happened. And I think that's how I have shifted and changed, is that in what came that was good of that situation is just fully evolving into an imperfect teacher who was leading a classroom.
What advice would you give to an aspiring leader?
I would say, get to know the people you are leading in real and authentic ways, in ways that are comfortable to you and authentic to you, so that you don't have to do anything that is outside of your comfort zone fully, but bring more of you to your leadership.
My guest today was Danielle Neufer. She's an educator, a coach, and the author of The Path of the Mindful Teacher, How to Choose Calm Over Chaos and Serenity Over Stress, One Step at a Time. And, you know, I was thinking throughout our conversation that most superintendents, especially really the best ones, still think of themselves as teachers. And they sometimes need a reminder, though, that teachers will do just about anything for kids as long as they do have clarity on that why and not just the what. So thank you so much for being my guest today, truly.
Thank you so much for having me.
Music for An Imperfect Leader was written and arranged by Ian Varley. Sam Falvo created our artwork, a wood print-inspired Daruma doll butterfly. Remember, imperfect leadership is not a scarlet letter. It's a badge of honor. It recognizes that serving as a lead learner is about being a vulnerable leader, an empathetic leader, a compassionate leader. And I'm proud to be an imperfect leader. I'm Peter Stiepelman. Please join me next time for another episode of An Imperfect Leader. Leadership in After Action. Thank you.